We are holding on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph by the Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, the first two dots, the seventh line of the Amud. So we learned in the Mishnah. We had. Kuf Yud Zayin. No, so then I have that in one place entirely. Let's try that again. Kuf Yud Zayin. Amr Aleph, eighth line. And line begins Al Shem Achim. So we learned in the Mishnah, we had Machloitas Bishama Batillo, when a woman comes to Beis Din and says that her husband is dead, is she able to collect her ksuba? Bishama said yes, if she's able to get remarried, for sure she's able to collect her ksuba. Batillo wanted to say no. You see that the brothers are not allowed to go into the inheritance, so we see Din and Mamanus are different. Bishama points out that may be, but after all, there is a specific tnai in the ksuba that says that she's allowed to, so that's that. Now, Amar of Nachman, Bos le Beis Din, v'Amar Meis Baili, Hatziru Nui Nase, if she comes to Beis Din and says, my husband's dead, give me permission to remarry, no problem. Hatziru Nui Nase, they allow her to remarry, and as our Mishnah said, v'Nois L'Ksubata, they give her a ksuba, because we said Bishama ended up agreeing with Bishama. What if it was the other way around? If she says, Tnui Ksubasi, if she says, give me my ksuba, without mentioning anything about getting remarried, or even about her husband dead, Hatziru Nui Nase, Hatziru Nui Nase, we don't even allow her to get remarried. My time, I died to the ksuba, sorry, because she's coming only with the ksuba in mind. So Rashi says the difference is that then we go according to the usual rule that for dinim amun it's dinim tuedim. For in order to prevent igur, and we said yesterday the chachamim would make all, so we're going to allow one aid, or we'll allow her own word, etc. But here, where she doesn't even seem to care about the igur, only about the ksuba, then not. The Rambam has a different explanation of it. The Rambam says that if she comes and says, give me my ksuba, we might be concerned. She's not even saying my husband's dead. She might be b'chol trying to say, I don't care, he's alive, but I want my ksuba. And she doesn't have the right to collect that then. So now they have the question, what if she says both? What if she specifically says both? Let me get remarried and give me my ksuba. Do we say, kiven de omer ksubasa adayt de ksubasa? Do we have then that once she mentions ksuba, that it means she does have the ksuba in mind? I don't know. Maybe not. Kol mila de'isle inish amalahu lebedina. Whatever. When a person has a claim in front of Beis Din, they're going to mention everything. She knows. Ultimately, she does want to collect her ksuba as well. So why should she bother coming twice to Beis Din? As long as she's here in Beis Din anyway to get permission, she might as well ask for the ksuba. You might say that yes, anything that a person has to say in front of Beis Din, they'll say them all at once. What if it's the other way around? What if she says, what if she says, give me my ksuba and allow me to remarry? Mahu. Then what would be the din? Here, you would say for sure she is coming specifically with the ksuba in mind, because she mentioned that first. Or maybe what it is she doesn't realize what it is that makes her mutter. So Rashi says she may think that what makes her mutter to remarry, collecting her ksuba, and that's why she mentions that first. The Ritva says, that's a very odd explanation. I mean, who would ever make such a mistake? Everybody knows you need a get or miss a sabal. So he explains that she doesn't know. He explains she doesn't know what it takes to get her ksuba. She doesn't know what makes her what exactly is going to make her mutter to collect her ksuba, and therefore she mentions it, and therefore she mentions it before anything else. Anyway, the answer is teku. Don't know. We have over here this v'imtim taloyma was in square brackets, which means some rishonim are goris it, some are not. Those who are goris it, we have a usual rule that goes back to the goyim that whenever the Gemara gives a series of cases, it says what's the din in this case? V'imtim taloyma such and such. Then what's the din in the second case? We pass in according to the v'imtim taloyma. So then it would come out that only the second case do we have a taku on, whereas the first one, if she says let me remarry and give me my ksuba, then we would allow it. And that's that is indeed how the Rambam paskens it. As opposed to if you're not gurdus it, then it means the teku goes on both of them. Mishnah continues. Hakol ne'emonin l'ha'ida. Everybody is believed to testify for a woman. So far, we've talked about when she herself comes and says that her husband is dead, or we talked about one aide coming. So anybody, and we mentioned before, and we'll have at the very end of the Masechta, that the Chachamim were makel, that even people who are usually psula eidos are kosher, even women who usually are psula eidos, even many, many other kinds of psula eidos. Everybody is believed to give eidos to a woman that her husband is dead, chutz mechamoisa, except for her mother-in-law, who the Gemara is going to go through, we'll go through in the Gemara, why each of these people would resent her and try to mess things up for her. They might dafka go and give false eidos in order that she'll go and get remarried, and then the husband's going to show up and she's going to be in a heap of trouble. So chamoisa, her mother-in-law, or bas chamoisa, the daughter of her mother-in-law, so her husband's sister, v'tzadrasa, or tzara, her co-wife that we've been talking about throughout the Masechta, v'yivimta, and her sister-in-law, the wife of his brother, or bas baila, and her stepdaughter, the daughter of her husband. Now, the Gemara mentions in Gittin that we had a Mishnah earlier in Amasechta as well, that even these five women, even though we don't believe them for Eidos Isha, we do believe them if they come with a get. Any one of them can also be a shliach halacha for a get, and that we do believe. So the question is, ma ben get la misa? So what's the difference why we believe them in the case of a get and not in the case of misa? On the face of it, don't you have to be afraid that maybe they forged a get as well? The reason is, shaksav mechiach, because the writing proves things. We're mainly relying on the writing. They're just a shliach to bring it. So the writing and the eidos that gives us enough to rely on, that we don't have to worry about that they might have made things up, because then it's easy enough to find out. Singmar says, Yibayilahu. Now, so we have the list of these five women mentioned in the Mishnah: mother-in-law, the mother-in-law's daughter, the tzara, the yavama, and their husband's daughter. What about other cases? Yibayilahu, bas chamiha mahu. What would be the din if it's the daughter of her father-in-law, but it's not also the daughter of her mother-in-law? So her father-in-law was married twice. He has a her father-in-law was married twice. He has a he has a son from one marriage and a daughter from the other marriage. So they have the same father but not the same mother. Would that be an issue? Here's the diagram over here. Would Leah be able to give eidos for Rachel? Now, if Leah was Abraham and Sarah's daughter, so Reuben's full sister, then there's no question she'd be also. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Bas chamoisa, but in this case she's only bas chamia. She's the daughter of Rachel's father-in-law. Is that also a problem? We have to consider what's the reason. Ma time of bas chamoisa. Do we say the reason why the daughter of the mother-in-law is aser? Why we consider that she hates this wife? Mishum de ika ima de sanula, because her mother-in-law doesn't like her. The mother-in-law in particular, so let's start with, why does the mother-in-law hate the daughter-in-law? I mean, you know, you have all the stereotypical jokes about it, but what's the underlying reason? The reason is because she figures to herself, you know what, here, you know, my husband had all kinds of property. Eventually, though, he's going to die. And my son and this woman and this woman, my daughter-in-law, are going to end up inheriting all of it. And their children will also. She's going to end up getting everything that comes from my husband, and therefore she hates her daughter-in-law. So then, according to that, so why would we say bas chamoisa? Mishum de'ika ima de'sanula, because since her mother Sarah in our scenario over here hates Rachel, her daughter-in-law, therefore he nami sanula. Therefore also Sarah's daughter would hate her, and then in that case it would only apply to the daughter of a mother-in-law. If it's the mother-in-law's stepdaughter, then there wouldn't be an issue, because it's not her mother. She's not learning from her mother to hate this woman. Here's the scenario. You have Reuben is married to Rachel.
Yes.
Reuben has disappeared. Well, okay, let's start with the usual case. The usual case is you have that Reuven has a sister, Rivka. He also has a wife, Rachel. We're saying that Rivka is not allowed, Rivka, Reuven's sister, is not allowed to testify that Reuven is dead. Because we're concerned, that's called Bas Chamoitza, the daughter of her mother-in-law. Rachel's mother-in-law is Sarah. We are concerned that because Sarah dislikes her daughter-in-law, and therefore she would be suspect of lying and then falsely saying that Reuven is dead so that Rachel will remarry and get into all kinds of trouble when Reuven shows back up, then in that case, we're concerned Rivka will do the same thing. So if Rivka is not Sarah's daughter, if she's only her stepdaughter, then it's not an issue. Or maybe the reason why a mother-in-law's daughter is Osir, because she says to herself, she's going to end up inheriting and eating up everything that my mother worked for. You have the same kind of issue over here. Even if she's not Sarah's daughter in this case, but still, whatever Sarah brought into the marriage eventually becomes part of Avraham's estate. Reuven ends up inheriting it, and then it goes into his family, including Rachel's as well. So then this daughter, Leah, might still have a problem with that. Because, yes, whatever Sarah brought into the marriage wasn't going to be going to me anyway, but what my mother, Rivka, brought into the marriage is. Because still, it goes to Avraham inherits from Rivka, and then it goes from there. So in the normal case, when Leah is a full sister of Reuven, then the reason maybe why she hates her sister-in-law, because that she is going to consume everything that my mother brought into the marriage. Well, in that case, same idea over here. She'll say that she's going to be taking everything that my mother brought into the marriage. So what is it? Toshma, Hakol Neman Lo'ida, a Braisa says, everybody is believed to give edus for a woman, Chutz Mechamesh Nashim, except for five women. Five. The Imisa Shishavion. If you're going to say that also a half-sister of Reuven is included, where they have the same father, different mothers, then you have six. So obviously it can't be. But the answer is not necessarily. It could be the basic reason is in the usual case when they're full sisters, it's not so much because her mother teaches her to hate her sister-in-law, but rather because she's thinking what's going to eventually happen with the estate, that whatever my mother brought into the marriage is going to end up going to them. And in that case, in our case over here, well, in that case, then it wouldn't make a difference whether they have the same mother or different mothers. Either way, she'd still have the same point. So there's no reason the Braisa could still well say five, even though one of them has two sub-cases, because those two sub-cases, it's the same basic mentality. So no proof, really. Okay, so We'll leave it undecided for the moment. The question is, we just said that there are five. Our Mishnah listed five, and the Braisa explicitly says five. But we say over Tanya, it says in a Braisa, we have a Braisa that says that there are seven women, not five. So who are the extra two? Into the Tahir of Yehuda. That Braisa is according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanar, or the Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Moisif Av Eshes of Vahakala. Rabbi Yehuda adds two more cases that are not allowed to be made. A father's wife, Rachel's stepmother, Hakala, and Rachel's daughter-in-law. And by the way, all of these are reciprocal, as I was going to say in a minute. If we say, for example, in the Mishnah that a mother-in-law can't testify for her daughter-in-law, then it also means the other way around. A daughter-in-law can't testify for a mother-in-law. So that's the question, why we need to add it. We'll talk about that actually in the Mishnah at the end of Amud Beis. Well, come on, upon him, we'll get to in a minute. But actually, I mean, on the face of it, primarily we're talking about for bad. If she's saying that the husband is dead in order that Rachel should get remarried and then get into all kinds of trouble. We'll talk about on the days in the Mishnah and in the Gemara after it, a little today and more tomorrow, whether this also applies when she's saying that he's not dead. We'll have it actually in the Gemara soon also, yeah. So Rabbi Huda adds also those two, stepmother and a daughter-in-law. Amrullah, so they told him, you don't need those. Eshes av harei b'chla basabal, when the father's wife is included in the daughter, in the husband's daughter, because again, they're reciprocal. If you're saying, if the Mishnah is saying that Rachel's husband's daughter, her stepdaughter, is not allowed to give edus for her, then it follows the other way around also. If it was the stepdaughter's wife that was, a husband that was missing, then Rachel wouldn't be allowed to give edus for her. So you don't need to add a separate case. And similarly, Kala Hareva Chalal Hamosa. You're saying the mother-in-law is also to testify for her daughter-in-law. Automatically, that means the daughter-in-law can't testify for the mother-in-law. So there's no reason to add those two. Vira Bihoda. So what does Bihoda answer back to that? He would say, Bishleima Chamosa Fanyalola Kala. I can understand, one second, let's go back to why are we saying that these women are also to give edus? Because they hate the daughter-in-law for various, each one for her own reasons. So why does the mother-in-law hate the daughter-in-law? Because again, she's gonna think to herself, I brought all kinds of property into this marriage, and eventually she's gonna end up winding up eating all of it because her husband is gonna inherit it. Her husband is going to inherit it after my husband dies, and then his wife is going to end up consuming it. Elakala, my time of Sanya Lachamoisa. There's no particular reason why a daughter-in-law should hate the mother-in-law. So therefore, Rabbi Huda adds, it's not necessarily reciprocal. Yes, the mother-in-law is not allowed to testify that the daughter-in-law's husband, that her son or stepson died. But it should be the other way around. A daughter-in-law should be able to testify that her mother-in-law's husband, which is her husband's father, has died. There's no reason we should suspect that she's doing anything wrong there. That's what the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute. After my upon him upon him. Wait a second. Similarly, he says. Similarly, he says, Bishleim Basabal, the Sanya La Ishis Av. Again, I can understand, for example, why a stepdaughter is going to hate her stepmother. De Amra Ka'achol Ligirusini, because then it's the other way around. She thinks to herself, you know what? Everything that eventually should be coming to me, she's going to be consuming while she's married to my father. Sorry, she's saying that she's going to be consuming everything that my mother brought into the marriage. My mother formerly brought property into the marriage. She died. My father inherited it. And now she's eating it. Now the stepmother is eating all of that originally comes from my mother. Ella Aisha Sa'av, my time is Sanya Labasabal, but why would the father's wife have any reason to hate her husband's daughter, her stepdaughter? Daughters don't yarishin anyway.
Don't what?
They don't inherit. Unless there's no boys, but we're not talking about that over here. If they had boys, then only the boys inherit. I'll be told. Ella my Moisif Tauti. So therefore he says. So therefore necessarily you have to add. You do have to add two. You can't say it's not reciprocal. It's a question. It's a question rather. Ella my Moisif Tauti. Okay, why is he indeed adding these two? If he's saying, Mela, according to the Chachamim, you're saying it's reciprocal, so there's no reason to add them in the first place. Rabbi Huda is arguing there's a difference, that, for example, a mother-in-law hates her daughter-in-law, but not necessarily the other way around. So why does Rabbi Huda add them? Why does Rabbi Huda say that a daughter-in-law can't give edus for her mother-in-law, etc.? The answer is, Ella Kala my time is Sanyal Hamoisa. So no, we have a different reason. Why does a daughter-in-law hate her mother-in-law? The Megala is not called the Avda because she figures that her mother-in-law tells Lashon Hara about her, basically. She tells her son everything that she, the daughter-in-law, is doing. Well, but the son goes and visits his parents every so often, and then called the avda rather. Sorry. I didn't have a chance to prepare as much as I usually do today, so I'm sorry if I'm getting a little confused here. So the mother-in-law is regularly telling her son lashon hara about her wife. You know, again, like in all the mother-in-law jokes, you know, that you're too good for her, you know, that sort of thing. And similarly, Eshes of Nami Sanya Labasabal, similarly, the stepmother hates her stepdaughter, the Magawalavia called the object, because again, she figures that the daughter-in-law is always telling on her to her father. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said, so that's why, not because the Chachamim are saying it's a reciprocal thing. In each of these two cases, there is a separate reason of its own. And therefore, you have to mention seven, not just five. V'Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say you don't need those reasons. Kamayim upon him came leva adam la'adam. They're like, water reflects the face, so one person's heart reflects the other. If, for example, the daughter-in-law hates the mother-in-law, automatically, if the mother-in-law hates the daughter-in-law, automatically, the daughter-in-law hates the mother-in-law. You don't need to look for a different reason. You don't need to look for a different reason, then there's no reason to count them separately. They may have other reasons of their own, fine, Rabbi Yehuda's reason, but that's not important. It's good enough to just say that you have five reciprocal relationships. Rabbi Yehuda, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, that pasuk's not talking about human relationships. That pasuk's talking about the relationship that a person has with the Torah. Which Rashi says two explanations. Number one, it's a matter of yagaiti umatzati tamin, kamayim upon him. How does the water, whatever face, whatever effort you put into the Torah, you get it back. Whereas if you don't, if you
it's all of Lord in the same person.
Yeah. Or Rashi's second explanation is that. He's making a good point, though. According to this explanation, it means came leva adam la adam. We usually think of it as it means so one person reflects the other. No, it means all the same person. So the person, what the person is getting out of Torah, reflects what he put into it. Or Rashi says another explanation is that it means, we learned back in Tainis, that you can have a situation where a person's Rebbe is not being friendly to him. He's not showing him a friendly face. And the Talmud may have a very hard time learning because of that, which in that case, then the Talmud has to go and ask Mechila from his Rebbe, maybe bring some friends to try and ask Mechila and get his Rebbe back on his good side. So Kamayim upon him, Kain Leva Adam La Adam, as the Rebbe's face reflects the Talmud, that's how the Talmud is going to do as far as picking up the learning. But again, not necessarily does it apply more generally to human relationships. So far that's the bottom line then. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, so the Chachamim are saying you have five reciprocal relationships, so 10 altogether. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't believe in this matter of reciprocity. So therefore he says you have the five from our Mishnah plus another two which the Chachamim included in their list also, but he has different reasons for those than what the Chachamim are saying. It's not just a matter of because she hates her, therefore she hates her. No, each one of those seven has a separate reason of their own. And by the way, among these reasons, some of them are based on financial matters, like we were saying, for example, with the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, et cetera, that, you know, one day she's going to end up inheriting everything that I brought into the marriage. Some of them are more, and we'll talk about that tomorrow in the Gemara, some of them are more a matter of that there's tzar haguf. Sarah is being a classic example of that. Why does one Sarah hate the other one? Because Eina Ishim Iskanes Elav Yerach Chaverta, where a woman is jealous of the fact that she's losing out on Oina because of the other woman. The time that they have with their husband, marital relationship, she's getting less of it because there's another wife. So now, Amar of Acha Ba'ivya, Bo'i B'ma Rova, they asked in Eretz Yisrael as follows: Chamoisa Vol Acha Mikan Mahu. What happens if it's a future mother-in-law? So what do we mean, in other words, that right now she's a Yavama. Right now she's a Yavama. Potentially she could end up being, so let's see the scenario over here. You have two brothers, Reuben and Shimon. Rachel is married to Reuben. Potentially one day she could end up marrying Shimon, if Reuben dies childless. Rivka is not right now her mother-in-law because Rivka is not right now her mother-in-law because she's married to Reuben. She's married to Reuben's father, but she's her father's wife right now. Okay, I don't know. They seem to have made a mistake here with the colors. They should have drawn Shimon over here with a different color representing his mother. Anyway, the point is, right now Rivka is not her mother-in-law, but if she becomes a Yevama, if she marries Shimon, then she will be. That's Chamoisa Abal Achamikan. Mahu. So what would be the din? Mi maska daita de misbal v'nafakama yavam. Does the mother-in-law think, consider that the first husband, Reuben, might die, and then this woman, Rachel, is going to end up doing Yibum, and therefore with Sanyala, and therefore already she hates him now, and therefore already she hates her now? Or lawyer, maybe not.
You say, I don't want to get married, I want to have a...
Chalitza? That's one consideration, yeah. Toshma, a later Mishnah in our parak says Amra mes bali vachach mes chami. If a woman comes and says my husband died and then my father-in-law died, tinase v'titoksuba, she's allowed to get remarried and collect toksuba v'chamoisa asura, but her mother-in-law remains asur. Because if we're saying, now this goes back to your question, in this case she's saying that my father-in-law died. What we're saying is we ignore that part of her aedus. So there's no aedus that the father-in-law died, therefore the mother-in-law remains usher. Because again, our Mishnah said that we don't allow a mother-in-law to testify for her daughter-in-law or vice versa. We don't believe here that when the daughter-in-law is coming and saying, my father-in-law is dead, and therefore my mother-in-law should be able to remarry, we can't accept that. What if she's trying to mess her up? Rashi, by the way, points out that the chiddush is, even if she says in that order, effectively, when she's saying my husband died, that's the equivalent of saying, now this woman is not my mother-in-law anymore, because she's not related to me anymore. Nevertheless, we still say, palgin and diburah, that we divide her edus in half, and we only accept the part about her own husband. Now, so my time chamois asura. So why would we say that her mother-in-law remains asur? Lav mishum daminin loy bay lamayis for like chamiyomayis. The pashtus, it must be because we figure that it's not a matter of pagin and dibur. Actually, we say that really nobody died over here. Her own husband didn't die, and her father-in-law didn't die. The reason why she's saying this, like kol chamoisa, who to come chabna. She's doing. She wants to do it in order to mess up her mother-in-law for the future. But she figures the boss of Shaita lo tesi titzaron. What's going to happen? She figures to herself. If I know eventually that both our husbands are going to come back. So myself, fine, I'll wait up and I won't marry right away. Or even if I do, Thomas Napshi and Plishtim, as Gemara is going to say later. I'd rather, you know, I'll suffer as long as she suffers also. But what's going to happen? The main point is she's thinking to herself, if my mother-in-law takes this edus and goes based on that and gets remarried, and then her husband, my father-in-law, shows up, what's going to happen now? At this point, she's going to be so embarrassed for the future that she's never going to have any kind of position to be able to go and ever tell my husband lashon hara about me again. Remember, we said before the reason why the daughter-in-law hates the mother-in-law is because of that svara, because she figures the mother-in-law is always bad-mouthing her to her son. So she figures, in that case, let me knock her down a peg so she won't have a chance to do that in the future.
So not Thomas
Napshi and Plishti, right, but, yeah. Savra, she figures, Levasa Shaita Leitesi Titzaron. Because she's figuring, eventually, she won't be able to come and be Mitzarami. So we see, therefore, in other words, you are looking toward the future. Because remember, we're talking about over here that the younger husband, who's the one who the daughter-in-law's husband, the one who she's figuring her mother-in-law is always bad-mouthing her to him, has been gone for a while. So the mother-in-law, anyway, is not in any kind of position to bad-mouth her to him. And yet we seem to be saying that we're not going to accept her aegis because she's figuring that she's looking ahead to the future. Eventually, when my husband comes back, she's going to go back to doing that kind of thing. So we see that people do plan ahead for the future. So So by the same token then, going back to our question about the future, about the potential future mother-in-law of the Yavama, yes, she might be planning ahead in the future that I want to knock her out of the running so that she'll never have a chance in the future to start bad-mouthing me to my new husband, Shimon. How do I do that? By arranging that even now she thinks her husband's dead, goes and gets remarried. Then he turns up alive, and it becomes such a scandal in the city that she'll never think to say anything bad about me again. The answer is no. Duma shiny hasam did rogish lo tira. No, because the difference is in our case, in this last case that we just talked about, where she's testifying about her own husband and about her father-in-law, the difference is she already had the tzar. She already had her mother-in-law. She already felt beforehand that her mother-in-law is bad-mouthing her to her husband. So yes, of course, now she's thinking, let me make sure to prevent that for the future. Now that I know it's already been happening in the past, let me make sure it doesn't continue happening in the future. As opposed to the case of the Yavama, where it never happened in the first place, maybe not necessarily. Maybe she's not going to start thinking, but what if it happens and what if she does? People aren't going to go that far. So fine. I said something that wasn't completely true. I thought he was dead. I didn't realize. Whatever. You know, she could find excuses for herself. But you know, and that somebody got remarried. Somebody went and remarried when her husband is really alive, and then he shows up again. It becomes a really huge scandal. Tosfos seems to point out something similar to what you said, that after all, with the Yavama anyway, you don't have a certainty that she's going to do Yibum anyway. She might end up doing Chalitza. But okay, then in this case also, it's not necessarily a certainty that the husbands are going to come back from overseas. But we seem to be making this kind of comparison. But we're saying there could be a difference between whether she already felt the sire before versus whether she's thinking ahead to she's going to feel it. There is a difference in that. Having said that, though, by the way, as far as the future, Tosfos points out another thing. When you get down to it, one of the ones that we said that we said in the Mishnah that's also to give edus for her is the Yavama, her sister-in-law. Now, why would that be? Because she figures that we may end up becoming tzaris. If her husband dies childless, she's gonna be in a situation where she has to do yibum or chalitza, but yibum is preferable. We learned earlier with my husband, and then she and I are gonna be tzaris. So that's an example of looking towards the future. The Tosfos asks, why would she want to do that anyway? In that case, she's actually making things worse for herself. If this yavama goes and says that my sister-in-law's husband is dead. Automatically, that makes them tzaris. Adrava, she'd have more of an interest in saying he's not dead in order to prevent her from becoming a tzara, a co-wife, that they'd both remarry to the same husband. And basically, Tosfos answers that she figures, you know what? Yes, I'm taking the chance that for a short while we're going to have to be tzaris. But I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to take that chance in order that eventually he'll come back, and then she'll be completely, and then she'll be messed up, and then she'll be much more messed up. It'll be also to her original husband and to my husband, and so on and so forth. Yeah, I'm willing to go through a little bit of tzara now with her, having her as my tzara, as my co-wife, in order to make things worse for her in the future. Yeah, people can be devious that way.
If her yavama comes and says that your husband, my
brother-in-law, my husband's brother died, why not? If we didn't have our Mishnah saying that we don't believe her, she might well go and do yivum on that basis. Except that then her husband's going to turn up alive, and then the chase him is there, and we're going to have a chal, she's going to have all the penalties. So the Yavama would figure, you know what, I'd rather take my chances that for a short while she'll have to be married to my husband and I'll have to put up with her in my house, but at least that way I'll be rid of her forever. As opposed to, I guess the idea is that the Yavama might figure the alternative is that I don't testify he's dead, but what happens if one day he dies anyway, and then she is going to be my Yavama forever, and then I have no way to get out of it. Sorry, I mean the co-wife. Yeah, Yavama is a sister-in-law. Mishnah continues, Eid Eimim Meis V'Nisseis, if one aide came and said that the husband died and the woman remarried, Uva'achad Ba'amal Loi Meis, and then another aide comes and says he did not die, Hareza Loi Teitzei, that she does not have to, on the face of it, Loi Teitzei means she does not have to get divorced. We'll talk about in the Gemara what it means exactly. One says not. But we'll talk about it. We'll talk about in the Gemara the details of it. No. Loi Teitzei, the pashtus means that on the face of it, it sounds like it means she does not have to get divorced. She's allowed to stay married to the second husband. But we'll talk about in the Gemara what it means exactly. Eid Oimim Meis or Shnai Oimim Loi Meis. What if one aide said he died and then two aidim said he did not? Alpha Pishanitis Teitzei. Then in that case, even if she got married, we force her to get divorced. So two aidim against one, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, yeah. Shnaim Oimim Meis v'Eid Oimim Loi Meis. If two aidim came and said that he died, and then one aide came and said he did not, and Alpha Bishalinis is Tinase, then she's good. Even if she did not yet get married, she's allowed to Lachatchila. In the first case of the Mishnah, we said that once she got married, then we don't force her to get divorced. Here we're saying if once two aidim came, Lachatchila will allow her to get married. So even if one aide comes and contradicts, that doesn't change anything. So Gemara starts off. Taima Denisis, so what are we saying in the first part of the Mishnah? Why do we allow her to stay married? Because she already got married. Halo Nisis Latinase. On the face of it, it means that if she didn't yet get married, we shouldn't allow her to. If you had one aide saying yes and one aide saying no. The question is, how could that be? Ula, didn't Ula say, Kol Makam Shemina Torah Eid Echad Harei Kan Shnayim? Any place where the Torah believes one aide, that it's the equivalent of two. There's three cases in Halacha where we believe one aide. Our case over here about Eidus Isha. You have another case of Eidus Isha involving a Sota. If one aide comes and says that the Sota actually became Tomei, actually had an affair, had relations with the Boil, then that makes her Osir. And the third case is Egla Rufa. If you find a body out in the field, nobody knows who killed him, then you do the whole ceremony with the Egla Rufa. If even one aide comes and says that I know who killed him, no Egla Rufa. Even though one aide is not enough to prosecute the guy, it's enough to prevent Egla Rufa from happening. And Ula says, a general rule, any of those cases where the Torah says we believe one aid, Hare Kan Shnayim, then that one aid is the equivalent of two, the Ein Dvarav Shalachad B'Makam Shnayim. And then when the later aid comes, we say one aid doesn't count against two. So why should we say in the beginning of our Mishnah, in the first case of our Mishnah, that you have one aid says yes, one aid says not, we say V'Dyevet, she can stay married. Shouldn't it be L'Chatchila, she's allowed, just like in the Sefer of the Mishnah, she's allowed to get married because we have the equivalent of two aidim at the beginning. The answer is you're right. Hachikama, what the Mishnah means, Eid Echad Oimim Meis V'Hiturua Leinase. It means if one aide came and gave Eidos that her husband died, and Beis Din gave her permission to be married, she didn't actually marry yet, but they gave her the permit. Uva Echad Va'amal Loi Meis, and then another aide comes and says she did not die. Loi Teitzei means Loi Teitzei Mehatera Harishon. She does not leave her first heter. She is L'Chatchila allowed to get married at that point. Now, Rashi makes the point that if Beis Din had not given her the permission yet, then it's considered bevasachas. With Ula's rule that we accept that one aid is the equivalent of two in these kinds of things is when they come what's called bezeach hazeh, one after the other. But if they come bevasachas, both at the same so that's the thing. Tosfos points out in a few places that what Rashi says over here seems to contradict what he says in other places in Shas, that Vasachas versus Vasachazeh literally means Vasach Kedidibur or afterwards. Here Rashi is implying that it's considered Vasachas as long as the permit wasn't given yet. Once the permit is given, then that makes it the one aid has officially been accepted as two aided. Then the Mishnah continued, Eid Oimim Meis, if one aide said he died and then two aidim said that not, then we say she has to get divorced. The question is, Pshita, Ein Dvarav Shalachad B'Makom Shnayim. Well, of course, you can't. How can one aide possibly count in the place of two, against two? The answer is, Lo Tzricha B'Psulei Eidus. You're right, but the Mishnah could be talking about that the two people who came and said he's not dead are P'Psulei Eidus, for example, women. V'chidur Reb Nechemya, and therefore the Mishnah would be going like Reb Nechemya. D'tanya Reb Nechemya over. Kol makom shemina Torah eid echad. Any place, the three cases that we just talked about, where the Torah believes one aid, halach acha roiv deis, then what you do is actually you go according to the majority of people. Usually, in other words, when it comes, in other words, we have like this. In most cases in the Torah, when we say you need two aidim, then there's no difference two or three or 100. What's the lashon? Today kaneo mea katray. If two edim come and say one thing and 100 edim come and say the opposite, doesn't matter. The 100 have equal weight with the two. But here, Rabbi Nechemiah is saying that in these three cases, since the Torah is being matir one aid, then that changes the rules. That means that now we go according to the actual number of people. But also, shtei noshim beishachad, kishnei noshim beishachad. Therefore, we consider two women against one man to be the equivalent of two men against one man. So yes, in other words, what the Mishnah would be saying is, you had originally one man came and said, Adus, that he's dead, which therefore we believe in, like two Adim, like Ola said. But now two women came and said the other way around. We say two is greater than one. Therefore, that's even though two women usually are psula Adus, on the face of it, we shouldn't count them against what we have the equivalent of two Adim for. But no, based on Rav Nechemiah's statement, we're saying that this kind of case is different. The numbers are more powerful, right? Meaning, if it wasn't a matter of one aid, if it had been, for example, if it was a regular case of dinim mominus or something, and you had, let's say, two aidim came and said one thing, and then three women came and said the other way around, we would discount that. But here, since we're accepting aid echad and we're accepting women, then we go according to the majority. The ibo is same, or another possibility, then no. Kol heichad da'asa aid echad kasha meikara. If one kasha aid, one man came originally, then a filomei noshim ka'aid echad damyan, then you're right. In the first case of it, you know. In the first answer of the Gemara, when we're saying according to Rav Nechemiah, we're assuming that he was a kosher to aid. He was a kosher to aid, but two women came afterwards. But since this is a case where we accept one aid, then we go al acharoiv deis. The Ibrei same, or another possibility, that no, there is a difference between kosher versus pasul aidim. Kol heichad de'asa aid echad kosher meikara. If you're right, if one kosher aid had come to begin with, afilo mei noshim ka'aid echad damyan, then you're right. Even if afterwards 100 women came, that's only the equivalent of one aid, and then we're back to the case of the first part of the Mishnah. One aid said yes, one aid said not, and then we say it depends whether she had gotten the heter yet or not. Ella, so what is the case of our Mishnah when it says that one came and said mess and then two came and said not? And we want to find out why did the Mishnah have to tell us that. It obviously can't mean two kosher to aid him because then it would be kosher. What we mean is, it means that the first one who came and gave the aidus was a woman who was possible aidus, except in these circumstances. So therefore, what you have to do is you have to re-explain what Rav Nechemiah said as follows. Rav Nechemiah, in a kol makom shemin atara eda, chod holok achar rov deis, you go according to the majority, but also shnei noshim b'ish achas, k'shnei noshim b'ish achad. Therefore, if you have two women against one woman, then it's the equivalent of two men against one man. Avo shnei noshim b'ish achad, k'pago pago dami. But if you have two women versus one man, then yes, that's the equivalent of one against one, or that it's exactly balanced. In other words, so according to this explanation, in other words, when the Mishnah says eid omer meis or shnayim omer loy meis, it means so then according to the second explanation, and this is halacha, the rules are as follows. The rules are if you have the original eid was a kosher eid, then nothing else can override him except for two kosher eid. If you have one kosher eid or one or more possible eidim, such as women, nothing happens. It's just half and half, and then you follow the first part of the Mishnah. If the original aid was possible, that's when you go according to the majority. That's when you say if it was originally one woman came and said one way, and then two women came and said the other way, or two came versus three, or 10 versus 11, or whatever, then you go according to the majority. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us. And therefore, we say that in that case, she does have to get divorced. Then the Mishnah had given the last case, Shnayim Omrim Nes Chulah, that we said if two witnesses came and said he's dead, and then one aide came and said that not, then Lachat Chilah we allow her to remarry. And by the way, Tosfos points out, when we said Lachat Chilah we allow her to marry, not necessarily is that the halacha, because there is still a matter, Tosfos points out, there's a matter of Lazus Fasayim. You don't want to act in a way that people are going to talk about that you did something wrong. You don't want to give people an excuse for Lashon Hara, basically. So Taka, if you have one aide coming and saying that he didn't die and she didn't yet get and she didn't yet get the permit, she shouldn't like a chila go and get married at that point. But that would only be midrabanan. Our Mishnah is talking about midrashita. Then we have the last case of the Mishnah where two Edim said that he's dead and one said that's not. The question is, my kamash balon. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah? The psula edus b'chidur b'nechem yadalzo b'alzo roiv de'ed. You're telling me then that again this last part of the Mishnah would have to be talking about it with women or other psula edus, that you had first two women and then one woman? So then what's the chiddush? That's the same as the previous case. We already established that according to Rav Nechemiah, when it's psula edus, you go according to the majority of people. You don't say the usual rule, trei kamei or mei kutrei, because this is a special kind of situation. So then what's the last part adding? The answer is, mao detema tiyaz limin basa roiv deyaz l'chumra. Okay, but based on the previous part of the Mishnah, you might have said you go according to the majority, l'chumra. There you had, again, you know, you had one woman coming and saying he's dead, then you had two coming and saying he's not, and we said you believe the two over the one. That's l'chumra. Ava l'kula loy, but maybe if it was l'kula here in the last part of the Mishnah, where it's the other way around, two said that he's dead, and one says that not, and it would be a kula to follow the two and allow her to remarry, maybe we shouldn't accept that. Kamash malam, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that we do. And here's the Mishnah. Achas emeres mes v'achas emeres loy mes. Suppose you have two women, sorois, or any of the scenarios that we had two Mishnayos ago. The women are not allowed to give edus to each other. But let's take the simple case. Yeah, two sorois of one husband, two co-wives of one husband. So one of them says he died, and one of them says not. Zusha emeres mes tinasa v'tito ksubasa. The one who says he's dead is allowed to remarry, and she's allowed to collect her ksuba. The one who says he's not dead is not allowed to remarry, and she's not allowed to collect uksuba either, because what we do is like this. So this goes to your question for Yaakov. Do we accept their edus we said before we don't accept their edus to say that he's dead, because we figure maybe she's trying to get that she'll remarry and then get into trouble. Our Mishnah is telling us the other way around is also true. Because you have the opposite thing. She may Davka want to say that he's not dead when she knows he is, in order that her tzara, or whichever one of these other four women, will remain in Aguna. So therefore, we discount her edus completely. So as far as herself, what she's done is called Shavya Nafsha Chaticha Beisura. By her declaration that my husband's not dead, effectively she's declared, I'm author. So fine. Okay. You have the right to be able to declare yourself in Beisin that you're author to remarry. But you don't have the right to we don't accept that when you're saying that against your tzara.
When they come to Vasacha.
I don't know that there's a difference. Another case, Achas Emeres Mes, Achas Emeres Nerag. What happens if both of them agree he's dead, but one says he died naturally and the other one says he was killed? Rav Meir says, you have a contradiction over here. Therefore, they can't remarry. Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon.
They're not
real. Right, but the point is that Rav Meir figures that there is, after all, a contradiction over here. So therefore, you can't... We said before we discount the second woman's edus because she's the other one's tzara. But here, and the Gemara is going to discuss why Rav Meir doesn't argue in the first part of the Mishnah as well. Given that there's this contradiction over here, we don't completely discount her edus. We discount it as far as you want to say that your tzara is or isn't allowed to marry. Fine, we're not going to focus on that. But you are agreeing with your tzara to some extent, and your tzara herself is saying that she's allowed to be married. We can accept her own edus about herself. But you and her are contradicting each other on the circumstances, and therefore that's no good. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say no. The fact is they both agree that he's dead, so let him remarry. In the Chiddushim of the Tzemach Tzedek, he has a bit of a discussion about this. In court cases, in halacha, in the dinim of edus, in halacha, there's a distinction between two different kinds of questions that you ask the edim. There's chakiros and there's bedikos. Chakiros are the basic questions that you have to ask in order to establish the date and time and the major circumstances of it. You know, it happened on Wednesday, such and such a date, on Crown Street. You know that Reuven pulled out a gun and shot Shimon. and at the time, etc. All those kinds of things are called chakiris. Because those are essential. You have to be able to establish the actual date and time and the actual circumstances. Then you have bedikas, which are kind of side questions. Things like, for example, what color shirt was he wearing? What kind of tree were they standing under? Those kinds of things. Where if the Edom contradict each other in those, then also the Edus is bottled. The difference is that with Bedikas, the Edom have the option to say, I don't know. What color shirt was he wearing? I don't know. I didn't pay attention to that. But, you know, one aide, you ask what was the weapon, and one aide says it was a gun, and the other one says, I'm not sure, throw out the whole thing. So the Tzamachedet makes the point over here in his Kedushim that what we see with Mes and Nerag is part of Chakiros. And we're still saying, according to Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Shimon, that we'll accept it. Because the fact is, they both agree that he's dead. The manner exactly how he died is less important, and therefore that's good enough to accept it. Another case: Edom and Meis for Edom and Loi Meis. What happens? One aide says that he died, and one said that he didn't. Ishai Meres Mes for Ishai Meres Loi Mes. If one woman says he died, and one woman says that he did not. Then she's not allowed to remarry. Now here we are talking about, by the way, to answer your question, here we are, this last case of the Mishnah, Rashi says we are talking about that the second one came and gave edus before we were machter the first one. So anyway, it says, Taima de Amra Loi Mes. So what's the implication? Why are we saying in the first case of the Mishnah that if one wife says that he died and the other one said not, then we say we discount what she's saying. Which the implication would be that if she had been quiet, if you had the two women, Rachel and Leah, Rachel says he died. So we're saying if Leah says he didn't die, then yeah, we're saying Shavi Nafshachatichadi Sura, and Leah is also to be married. And we ignore what she's saying as insofar as it affects Rachel. But the implication is if Leah herself hadn't said anything, she would be able to remarry. The question is how? We just said two Mishnayos ago that a Sarah cannot be made for the other one. So if Rachel is saying that our husband is dead, how does that help Leah? How do we allow Leah to remarry on that basis? The answer is no. In fact, the same din would apply even if Leah doesn't say anything, because Loi Mes Tzrichale. The chiddush is that the Mishnah has to tell us even if Leah is saying he didn't die. Why? Because you might think that really he did die. She might have to be saying he didn't die in order to ruin things for her tzara, because she figures with Thomas Nafshin Plishtim Kamra. She's figuring yes, that'll make me an aguna, but at least it'll make her an aguna as well. That's the chiddush, that even though she's saying that, we ignore that. But yes, the truth is that even whether she had said anything or not, she'd be in the same situation. Rachel is able to remarry based on her own edus, and we ignore anything that Leah says. Leah, because we can't accept Rachel's edus on behalf of Leah, and Leah herself is either not saying anything or saying that he's not dead, then yes, she remains also to remarry. Yeah.